Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Fast food workers across America went out on strike Thursday, including here in San Diego. We'll have details on today's show, along with some other important stories. If you're planning your weekend activities, heads up, there's a tropical storm moving into our region. We'll have details in our weekend weather forecast. Also, hear why experts are warning about an increase in neurotoxic rattlesnake bites, known as super bites, and it's not just the rural areas, it's happening in suburban neighborhoods locally. We'll tell you about a local congressional member's efforts to save home mail delivery service. And you'll learn about a former San Diego legislator who is starting up a foundation to help returning veterans. Our newsmaker interview today is with Jack Hsu, who is helping to head up a transportation justice movement in our region, and he'll be telling you about a public meeting and a protest rally coming up. On the crime front, we've got the latest on a sexual predator set for release in Campo, a plea entered by an SDG&E worker in a hit-and-run accident that killed a man in El Cajon, and a reward being offered for information that leads to the arrest of a man assaulting women locally. We also have details on a bizarre case of a naked Santee man detained for posting anti-Semitic graffiti at San Diego State University. Plus, we'll replay our interview with local musician Patrick Hadley, maker of an amazing musical instrument called the mbira. We'll have news on the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act and a warning from SDG&E about a scam targeting consumers. And then in Destination East County, we'll tell you all about the top events happening across East County in the next week, from a grape stomp festa to a powwow. So stay tuned and have a great weekend. Fast food workers across America Thursday put down their burger flippers and picked up picket signs. Workers went out on strike at about 150 fast food restaurants across the nation. The workers want wages raised to $15 an hour. They say that it's not just kids working at fast food chains anymore. The economy, they note, has forced many adults, including parents with families, to take jobs in the fast food industry. Many are struggling at minimum wage jobs. In some places, striking workers engaged in civil disobedience, including New York and San Diego. Locally, workers in City Heights staged a march from McDonald's to Burger King and Jack in the Box. Several staged a sit-in on the University Bridge over I-15 to draw the attention of motorists. And some protesters were arrested here, KPBS reports. A protest in New York City drew over 400 people, with other demonstrations in cities nationwide. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez of San Diego, formerly a leader with the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, says profits are boundless right now for these big corporations, and yet rank-and-file workers, the people on the streets, have to rely on public services, and taxpayers are funding that. She says, "We're really subsidizing these big corporations, and it's time that all of us get together and say that's just not okay." But the National Council of Chain Restaurants, which represents fast food businesses, has criticized the union tactics and particularly the civil disobedience, which they call trespassing. While noting that unions commonly stage events to draw media attention, the council's executive director, Rob Green, issued a statement which reads, "Encouraging activities that put restaurant workers and their customers in danger of physical harm is not only irresponsible, it's disturbing." Meanwhile, McDonald's has issued a statement indicating it would like to see any minimum wage increase implemented over time so the impact on businesses would be more manageable. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. With the U.S. Postal Service already beginning to phase out door-to-door delivery of mail, Congresswoman Susan Davis has introduced a bipartisan House resolution stressing that door delivery should not end. Two Republicans joined Davis as lead co-sponsors of House Resolution 711. In a newsletter to constituents, Congresswoman Davis states, "As postal reform moves forward in Congress, this bipartisan resolution will put the House on record as supporting the continuation of door-to-door delivery of mail." Postal reform efforts in both the House and Senate call for the elimination of door delivery over the next 6 years. Instead of getting mail at their door, residents would be forced to pick up their mail at shared cluster boxes, many of which are in insecure locations, poorly maintained, and far from people's homes. Davis says that proposals to end all door delivery are not good for postal customers, businesses, or the postal service in the long run. She adds, "My constituents who have to use cluster boxes report all kinds of problems with them, including a concern over ID theft. County residents with door delivery are also very vocal about wanting to keep this critical service, and I support them."
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. With the U.S. Postal Service already beginning to phase out door-to-door delivery of mail, Congresswoman Susan Davis has introduced a bipartisan House resolution stressing that door delivery should not end. Two Republicans joined Davis as lead co-sponsors of House Resolution 711. In a newsletter to constituents, Congresswoman Davis states, "As postal reform moves forward in Congress, this bipartisan resolution will put the House on record as supporting the continuation of door-to-door delivery of mail." Postal reform efforts in both the House and Senate call for the elimination of door delivery over the next 6 years. Instead of getting mail at their door, residents would be forced to pick up their mail at shared cluster boxes, many of which are in insecure locations, poorly maintained, and far from people's homes. Davis says that proposals to end all door delivery are not good for postal customers, businesses, or the postal service in the long run. She adds, "My constituents who have to use cluster boxes report all kinds of problems with them, including a concern over ID theft. County residents with door delivery are also very vocal about wanting to keep this critical service, and I support them."
Three brothers in the Wise family went to war, serving in our military. Jeremy joined the Navy SEALs, and Ben joined the Army's elite Green Berets. A suicide bomber took Jeremy's life in Afghanistan in December of 2009, and just over 2 years later, in January 2012, Ben died in a firefight in Afghanistan. Their brother, Beau, continues to remain on active duty in Iraq. Their cousin is Nathan Fletcher, former assemblyman and Marine Corps veteran. "As a combat veteran of the Marine Corps, I have lost too many friends, but no family should ever lose a veteran once they return from war," Fletcher says. Now Fletcher has established a foundation, the Three Wise Men, in honor of the Wise Brothers. The organization to help returning vets will hold its first fundraiser for veterans, a CrossFit event, on the deck of the USS Midway on October 18th. Similar events are planned on Veterans Day weekend in hopes of drawing national attention to the needs of returning combat veterans. Fletcher went on to say, "If we truly honor those who gave their last full measure of devotion, it's our duty to ensure that those who survive combat can also survive the transition home." He called it a tragedy that America is on track to lose more veterans to suicide than the number who died in combat. Up to 50 veterans kill themselves every day in America, often as a result of untreated psychological trauma inflicted by combat. The group aims to raise awareness of problems facing U.S. veterans returning from war and provide direct support to organizations and programs that help them transition from combat to civilian life. Fletcher concludes, "These warriors fought for our country. Now it is our duty to fight for them." You can learn more or sign up to participate in events to benefit veterans at www.threewisementribute.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
A San Diego Gas and Electric Company worker who struck a pedestrian in El Cajon and then fled the scene has pled guilty to felony hit and run. The victim, 55-year-old Robert Fisher, was later run over in the darkness by another vehicle and killed after Hector Hoyt, SDG&E's employee, left the scene. Officers tracked down Hoyt's vehicle in El Cajon thanks to tips from the public. Hoyt's employment with SDG&E ended after the accident. He faces sentencing on November 17th and could spend a maximum of 4 years in prison. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. If you hear that sound, watch out. Neurotoxic snake bites, known as superbites, were formerly rare in our region, found mainly in the Mojave Desert. But 10 News now reports these serious bites are occurring in suburban areas of San Diego and East County. A dog with a neurotoxin bite in Del Cerro, for example, went into shock and had difficulty walking. The dog was treated at Pet Emergency and Specialty Center in La Mesa, where veterinarians told 10 News that 3 of the 10 snake bites treated in the last week have been neurotoxic bites. Some doctors have theorized that Mojave green rattlesnakes, the most potent species of rattlesnake, may have made their way into our region or crossbred with other rattlers to produce more toxic venom. A fisherman bitten along Boulder Creek near Julian died a couple of years ago within minutes, one of several severe reactions seen recently in humans as well as pets. If you or your pet is bitten by a rattlesnake, it's important to seek out medical treatment immediately, since anti-venom injections can save lives.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report. Mark Arabo, president and CEO of the Neighborhood Market Association, has pledged a reward of $10,000 through Crime Stoppers for information leading to the capture of a suspect he has called the North Park Creep. The man was caught on surveillance video in the area where an assault occurred at 11:30 last Thursday night. The suspect knocked a woman to the ground and punched her in the face in an alley off Idaho Street, Sergeant Sean Tikuchi said. Police described the suspect as Hispanic, 5'6" to 6 feet tall, wearing a t-shirt, baseball hat, and dark pants. The suspect ran off when the woman screamed and several witnesses came to her aid. Detectives from San Diego Police Sex Crimes Units are working to determine if the latest attack is related to a string of other recent assaults in the area. On July 20th, a woman was attacked from behind and lost consciousness on Lincoln Avenue. Detectives said that assault was similar to another incident a month before, just a block away. Attempted sexual assaults on Meade Avenue, 33rd Street, and on Lincoln Avenue near Oregon Street were reported on June 17th and June 21st, according to police. During a special town hall meeting in North Park on Saturday, city officials said they are working on plans for better lighting in the North Park area. City Council President Todd Gloria said, "People have the right to feel safe in their community, and with the sixth attack, people are not feeling particularly safe." If you have information on this case, call the Sex Crimes Unit at 619-531-2210 or San Diego County Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for the $10,000 reward.
A convicted child molester will be released to live in Campo starting in late October. Superior Court Judge Margie Woods ordered the release over the objections of Campo residents and supervisor Diane Jacob. Alan Fields was convicted of sexually molesting 4 boys between ages 10 and 13. He first established relationships with these young boys as their Boy Scout leader or their caregiver. He served 25 years in prison and was later committed to a state mental hospital as a sexually violent predator. Then in 2003, he had a voluntary surgical castration. Fields will be released with conditions to live in a home in the 1100 block of Custer Road. He will be under 24-hour surveillance by Liberty Healthcare and will undergo outpatient treatment. Under the terms of his release, Fields is prohibited from entering nearby parks, trails, community centers, or neighborhoods. The placement has drawn widespread protests from community members and officials. Supervisor Jacob has objected to East County being used as a dumping ground for sexual predators. She notes that Fields is the 6th sexual predator placed in rural East County in recent years, and 3 of those have already violated the terms of their release.
With the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, wilderness advocates are reflecting on the enormity of the legislation that created the National Wilderness Preservation System, along with the challenges of maintaining current protections against renewed calls for resource extraction and passing new wilderness bills in a gridlocked Congress. Ryan Henson at the California Wilderness Coalition says the system of protection and management established by the Wilderness Act continues to function well in California.
When it passed in 1964, it protected several wilderness areas outright, and then it also established a system that was used in the years since to protect many other places, so that now, today, we have 14 million acres of wilderness in California.
Almost all of California's 149 wilderness areas are on federal public land, managed either by the U.S. Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management. Henson warns weakening or undoing the Wilderness Act would throw millions of acres of pristine public land into jeopardy by making them vulnerable to resource extraction or destructive recreation.
It wasn't too many months ago that a congressman in California proposed Yosemite National Park and several wilderness areas be opened up to logging. That was just earlier this year.
Henson also says it's easy to forget some high-value recreation areas protected by the Wilderness Act were once slated for development.
There were ski resorts, there were highways, big dams, huge logging projects, mining projects, all sorts of things that could have despoiled that wild country that today is available in its wild condition for everyone to go out and enjoy. And
wilderness can only be designated by Congress. And despite the resistance to creating new wilderness among many in Congress, Daniel Rossman in the Wilderness Society's Los Angeles office says there is legislation ready to go should the political climate change in Washington.
We should take the long view. Every president since the Act of 64 has passed wilderness protection bills. This current Congress has been a very tough one, but there are places waiting to be protected, from the rugged San Gabriel Mountains just outside of Los Angeles to the majestic California desert to the California coast.
Additional areas proposed for wilderness include a bill to expand protection to California condor habitat along the Central Coast and a wilderness proposal for the Carrizo Plain. I'm Tommy Howe, Public News Service.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report about a bizarre case of vandalism at San Diego State University. Campus police detained a 54-year-old Santee man after he was found burying all in a building marred by swastikas and other anti-Semitic graffiti. An SDSU representative said the man had known mental issues and was off his medication. The man drew symbols that were mostly illegible using dry erase markers, according to Beth Downing Chi, media relations manager at SDSU. She said he was naked when police showed up and discharged a fire extinguisher, adding that the man was transported to county mental health and that no criminal charges are pending. The damage was found in several rooms on the second floor of San Diego State's Education and Business Administration building late Sunday morning, August 31st. The Daily Aztec reported that swastikas were found in several bathrooms, and in classrooms more anti-Semitic messages were scrawled on whiteboards. The fire extinguisher that was discharged, according to the report, left footprints visible in the second-floor hallway that enabled campus police to easily locate the suspect. This report is based on stories originally published by San Diego Jewish World and Times of San Diego and syndicated by the San Diego Online News Association, of which East County Magazine is a member.
You are listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. And today, my very special guest is Jack Hsu. Jack is the president of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation in Descanso, where our station is headquartered. And he is also heading up a new group that's lobbying for transportation justice in San Diego County. They have a website, transitsandiego.org. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Jack, you have a meeting coming up, I understand, on this topic where the public can get involved and tell you what they'd like to see in terms of transportation for our region. Can you tell us when and where the next meeting will be?
The meeting will be coming up next week on September 9th.
Which is Tuesday.
And it's at 201 East Main in El Cajon.
That's Prescott Promenade Park.
Right. And it's in the evening from 5:30 to 7:30.
Very good. Tell us what your definition of transportation justice is. What is this all about?
Well, transportation justice involves three major themes. One is access, that people should have access to affordable and effective transportation. And generally, that would mean light trolley systems or buses. Another is that it deals with public health and safety issues. And thirdly, equity. We now have a terrible situation in which people who cannot afford transportation are actually having to pay more and get less public assistance. People who drive get more public assistance. So we want to deal with equity in terms of economic equity and
interesting. So when you say they get less public assistance, are you talking about people who just can't get into town to access benefits they might be entitled to?
Yes, that's one is lack of access to transportation. But there's also some economic things, a myth that needs to be addressed. One is that people who drive get more public assistance. So let me give you a little bit of data on that. The American Tax Foundation has determined that in California, where we have a very high rate of tax for users, that people who drive, the cost recovery is about 34-35%, one of the lowest in the country. People who take the trolley in San Diego, the MTS reports, has a 54% cost recovery. People who take the Blue Line, some of the poorest people in San Diego who take the transit system, has a cost recovery of 70%. There's more public assistance going to people who drive, and that's just a direct cost.
Interesting. So when you say cost recovery, can you define for the listeners exactly what that means?
That's the amount of taxes that we receive from the gasoline tax and from toll roads, which pay for the roads and highways that the people who drive use.
So really, the people that use the public transit then essentially are subsidizing all those drivers driving individual cars
exactly.
on the freeways.
Exactly. When you go to a shopping mall, park, and there's no such thing as free parking. Someone pay for that parking. You park, and you walk into the shopping mall and spend money. You're being helped by the person who walked or took their bike or took transit to that shopping mall.
Yeah, now speaking of shopping malls, you have mentioned that part of your vision would be to get the transportation hubs closer to places that people actually want to go, such as Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall, instead of centering it way out in an industrial area out here in El Cajon.
Yes, in El Cajon, we really didn't plan out the transit systems very well. So the trolley system that comes out to El Cajon is on old freight lines, and it bypasses the center of El Cajon, of course. So that was really not well thought out. So we need eventually a much better transit system in El Cajon. So the Cleveland National Forest Foundation does have a proposal to how do we change things.
Yeah, what's different about your proposal than the proposal that SANDAG has? And this would be a good point to mention that Cleveland National Forest Foundation and some other groups, Sierra Club, I believe, have actually sued SANDAG over its transportation plan, contending that it's upside down and backwards, all about supporting freeways first and not mass transit.
Yes, we sued SANDAG for their previous transportation plan. Actually, there's a long history of legal challenges to SANDAG. But for the last regional transportation plan, both the Attorney General, Sierra Club, Center for Biological Diversity, and other organizations joined in a suit against SANDAG for their plan. And it was found to be flawed. The plan in the Superior Court, the judge found that SANDAG abused their discretion and had a plan implemented that just didn't give us, the citizens of California and San Diego, enough information in their environmental document.
Right. Plus, it would actually arguably make climate change worse by increasing greenhouse gas emissions with all those vehicles instead of making it better, which should have been part of the goal.
Right. And, you know, we're supposed to be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. If we don't, we're going to have catastrophic, in fact, we already are having catastrophic impacts from climate change. Our goal in California, set by Governor Schwarzenegger by executive order in 2005, is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 80% of 1990 levels, 80% reduction.
80%, that's a lot.
Well, mm-hmm. but we can do it. There are many ways to do that effectively. However, SANDAG's plan, if we extend it to 2050, will miss that target by 700% higher than what we're supposed to be. So we're going up rather than down in terms of greenhouse gas emissions.
So you've come up with your own plan. Tell us how yours differs from SANDAG's, what it would include, and what that would mean for the residents across San Diego County.
All right. Our plan is called the 5010 Plan, and I'll get to the naming of that a little bit later. What it really calls for is a policy change. Let's put transit first. Let's build our transit system like many other modern cities have and make it effective. Let's do that first before we invest more on freeways. We're supposed to be reducing vehicle miles traveled in our area. In fact, one estimate calls for at least a 15% reduction of vehicle miles traveled in San Diego from our current levels. If we're going to reduce vehicle miles traveled, there's no need to invest billions and billions of dollars on an ineffective freeway system. Let's put that money into a transit system will give us a better transportation option and cost us less money in the long run.
So when you say a better transportation option and a transit system, are we talking about going beyond the existing trolley and bus service that we have, maybe improving that somewhat? But are we talking about adding a light rail system, maybe a subway system like we see up with BART in the Bay Area, for example?
Eventually, we can do that. First, what is being proposed in the 5010 plan is let's build what is planned, already planned, for the next 40 years into 2050 in the next 10 years rather than in the next 40 years. Let's speed things up. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that, we would have an effective transportation system within the urban core that's near downtown where most people go. Let's make it so that within that urban core, you can go from one place to another as fast as you can drive there and park now. And to feed that urban core, the 5010 plan also calls for the major routes, like going north to North County and going south, to be beefed up. Let's double track the coaster.
What about East County? What transportation improvements would you recommend for out here?
We need a better system, a better corridor to develop eventually. And so down the road, after we get that urban core to be effective, let's have a better, newer system that goes from possibly the downtown area of El Cajon, or at least through Parkway Plaza, into the urban core. And once you get into that urban core, past La Mesa, you can get from one place to another as fast as you can drive there now. You wouldn't need a car.
Are there things that can be done to help in rural areas? We find over and over that people in places like Alpine and further east, or up in the mountain areas like Ramona and Julian, have transportation issues. I know we've also found things like a lack of veteran services out there, and yet they have no way to get into town to access those kind of services. Obviously, it may not be practical to do light rail all the way up there, but what could be done or should be done?
There's two possibilities that I think is coming in the forefront. One is through technology and these iPhones and different apps, so that you can ride share much easier. So if you do have a doctor's appointment, you can quickly, through an app, put in your time and date that you need to go and find out if there are other people also going to downtown that you can share a ride with. So that's the technology that may be coming in the forefront that we need to invest time and energy into working that out. The other is that let's collaborate and cooperate more. So we know there are certain places in East County that we have buses going to all the time. And I'm thinking of the casinos and other places.
Yeah, the tribal buses.
So let's see if there's some kind of collaborative effort can be made between MTS, the provider of public transportation, and private entities.
Yeah, that's a little-known secret out there, but I know, for example, one of our own staffers here had heart surgery and wasn't able to drive for a while to get to his doctor appointments and lived way out in the wilds of Lakeside, but was able to get someone near where he lived to drive him to Verona and then take the casino bus, which is free, into downtown Lakeside, and from there he could hop an MTS bus. So it was actually a transportation option that I didn't really realize existed. I thought the casino buses were just to ferry the gamblers in from somewhere else, but actually it can be used by community members to, you know, to go wherever they need to go.
Yeah, that sounds like a win-win situation. I think the casinos would benefit from that, as well as those residents that need transportation coming back and forth. And those are some options we can look at in the near future to resolve these blockages of good and effective transportation.
What about things like Dial-A-Ride? I know La Mesa used to have that, where it was a dollar ride anywhere in the city for seniors, and they did away with it, I believe. But that was a really nice option if you were older and couldn't drive and needed to go to the... I think you could only use it for certain things like doctor visits, hospital visits, or grocery shopping. But
that would work to some degree, and I think we can always look at those.
It was a volunteer driver program.
And I see these as somewhat stopgap measures. If we have an effective transportation system, transit system, like other modern cities, a lot of those needs would go away. That means we would have a system in which it's designed for people with disabilities, which our trolley system has finally caught up with, so we have level platforms. A system in which bicyclists can easily bring on their bikes and get on the trolley. We don't have a lot of that going on, and we need to build those systems up. If you visit other modern cities, that's what they have, whether it's in France, in Bordeaux, France, even if you go to Washington, D.C. and see their MET system, People use that over cars. San Diego has made this terrible mistake. We believe that transit is only for those people who cannot afford cars. And it's entrapped and forced people with very low incomes to have to buy cars.
Yeah,
we need to get out of that thinking.
You mentioned D.C. I've spent some time back there, and everybody rides the metro back there. You've got the white-collar workers who work at the Capitol and everybody else that just hops on the light rail system every day.
And that's the thinking we have to get out of. Transit, effective transit, is for everybody. It's for the Wall Street banker as well as someone who's commuting back and forth from a school. If we think that way, then we could effectively build a system that works for everybody, and everybody will save money. For each dollar someone spends on gasoline, 85 cents leaves that region. If you spend a dollar on transit, 85 cents stays in that region. This is a bad economic approach that Sandag and our elected officials are taking. So people need to tell their mayors, their city councilmen, their state assemblymen, that they need to change the system here in San Diego. We have a bad system. It's bad for our economy.
Okay. Now, I understand that the transportation justice movement is actually a coalition, which includes, of course, your own organization, the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, but also some other groups. Those include
the Environmental Health Coalition, MAC. They run a number of charter schools in Chula Vista, okay, at a community-based organization. And the other is the City Heights Community Development Corporation. So these organizations have partnered with the Cleveland National Forest Foundation through a grant, actually, that the Environmental Health Coalition helped obtain, so that we can team up and work with these communities, the communities that are in need of transportation options, and have a greater voice to our elected officials to let them know that we need a better system that they have designed and continue to plan for. They need to change now.
Very good. Now, listeners, for those of you that tuned in late, we're speaking with Jack Hsu, who's the president of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, about the transportation justice movement getting started here. They have a couple of events coming up. One of them, as we mentioned earlier, is on Tuesday, September 9th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Prescott Promenade Park here in El Cajon, 201 East Main Street. There's going to be a transportation justice meeting where you, community members, can come and voice your opinions about what you'd like to see in transit for our region. The other, I believe, is coming up soon in downtown. Jack, tell us about that.
Well, Sandag has a couple of meetings coming up, this one this Friday, and then one on the 12th. On the 12th, the Sandag board will be voting on a couple of transportation network scenarios that they have devised. Both of these plans that they're looking at and considering are a step backwards. It's the old way of doing things. We're going to protest outside where they meet, which is on the corner of 5th and B Street downtown, the Wells Fargo building where Sandag meets. And at 11:30, we'll have a little show of force that we think San Diego needs a better plan, that we don't want to go backwards. We don't want their plan, which they call San Diego Forward. So that's going to be an event on the 12th. And if people want to come out, we'll have some signs and we'll hopefully get some huge media coverage.
Well, very good. We'll certainly be putting something up on eastcountymagazine.org too, listeners. So if you missed that, you can get information there as well as at the Transit San Diego site. And Jack, what is that website?
We have two websites. One is transitsandiego.org, and the other one that may be easier to remember is cnff.org. That stands for Cleveland National Forest Foundation, but cnff.org or transitsandiego.org.
Very good. Is there anything else you would like our readers to know about the transportation justice issues that we haven't already mentioned?
We live in a democracy, and we have to voice our opinions on these issues that are negatively affecting us, and it's just not just.
Well, very good. Jack, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
You are listening to East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering,
Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. Autumn is in the air, and this week's Destination East County activities reflect that. This weekend, you can enjoy apples, trains, grape stomping, and a powwow. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, from an attempt to break the world record for fireworks to an end-of-the-summer music festival. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Show's Destination East County.
September marks the start of Apple Days in Julian. The season runs for 2 months in September and October. Visitors flock to Julian to savor apple pies, apple cider, candied apples, and you pick apples directly at local orchards. On weekends, the Julian Doves and Desperados perform free melodramas. The season culminates in a festival October 4th and 5th and a pie-eating contest on October 3rd. But you can enjoy the delicious start of apple season right now.
Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo is offering a Golden State Vintage Passenger Train Journeys. The fall schedule begins with excursions on Saturday and Sunday, September 6th and 7th. These leisurely 12-mile, one-hour trips down the mountain to a tunnel and back will depart from the Campo Depot at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. each day. Reservations are not required. Limited opportunities are also available to ride in the vintage diesel locomotive with the engineer and help blow the engine's horn. Seats are limited and advance reservations are suggested for this activity. For more information, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at prsm.org.
The Sequon Band of Kumeyaay Nation will host its 25th annual powwow on September 5th through 7th at the Sequon Reservation in El Cajon, located behind the Sequon Casino. A powwow is a celebration and a time for people to join together, sing, dance, renew old friendships, and make new ones. Today, dancers and singers from tribes across the nation also come to compete for prize money. They've also found an array of vendors offering Native American crafts, from carved gourds and wooden baskets to hand-carved flutes, blankets, handcrafted silver and gemstone jewelry, and much more.
It's harvest time in Julian, where you can jump into the fun at the Julian Grape Stomp Festa this Saturday, September 6th at Mangini Winery. Guests are invited to help stomp tons of grapes and, of course, savor some of the wine tasting. There are also activities for kids, including games and miniature golf. There's a fee for this event. Tickets are available on-site or through the Julian Merchants Association. Visit julianmerchants.org. And now, for a preview of coming attractions.
Viejas will attempt to launch the world's longest chain of fireworks, more than 10,000, to celebrate its 23rd anniversary on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. You're invited to the festivities near the Viejas Hotel pool to witness the sky come alive with fireworks during this Guinness Book of World Records setting attempt. Learn more at viejas.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to take a seat in their amphitheater on September 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. for the third annual Harvest of Stories. Storytellers of San Diego will delight and entertain the audience with nature tales at this family event, which this year also features a sing-along and some dancing. There will also be a nominal cost for this event, $7 for adults, kids 12 and under, $3. Opportunity drawings will also be held and refreshments will be served. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Backcountry Land Trust will hold its third annual Wine and Cheese Friendraiser on Saturday, September 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wright's Field in Alpine. Podunk Poets will provide live music. The event also features a hosted bar, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, and a raffle. Tickets for the Backcountry Land Trust event are available online in advance at bclt.org.
For the 45th year, Julian celebrates the end of the summer with music. The Julian Music Festival will be held at the Mangini Winery on September 20th from 1 to 8 p.m. This year's event features bluegrass to celebrate the festival's roots, western ballads to remember the past, as well as music by current songwriters and singers. Performers range from the cool band Luke performing high-energy favorites to Trails and Rails offering train songs, cowboy tunes, pop, swing, vocal harmonies, and whistling. For tickets and more information, visit julianmusicalfestival.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Plastic accounts for 90% of all floating debris in our oceans. This has negatively impacted over 250 species and puts petroleum-based chemicals into our food chain. Many bags wind up in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in the North Pacific Ocean that has been estimated to measure hundreds of thousands or even millions of square miles, larger than the state of Texas. Whales, dolphins, and sea turtles choke by swallowing plastic bags in the ocean, which resemble jellyfish that some of these animals eat. Bags can also become entangled around an animal's neck. To help solve these problems, the California legislature has voted 22-15 to ban plastic grocery bags, joining over 100 cities nationwide that have already banned the bags. The California measure, Senate Bill 270, is now awaiting Governor Jerry Brown's signature. East County's Assembly representatives split on the measure, with Republican Brian Jones voting against it and Democrat Shirley Weber voting in favor. The final bill is a compromise that addresses concerns over the impact on workers, said Senate Pro Tem-elect President Kevin De Leon of Los Angeles. Senator De Leon originally opposed the bill, but worked with industry and environmentalists to craft a solution. He calls the revised measure a win-win for the environment and for California workers. This legislation will implement a ban on single-use plastic grocery bags while promoting recycling and manufacturing. It also provides financial incentives to retrain California workers in the affected industries. Pete Grande, CEO of Command Packaging, says his company has already started diverting plastic from landfills and producing reusable bags in California. He adds, forward-thinking plastic bag manufacturers have the opportunity to grow jobs and manufacture environmentally sustainable products. Senate Bill 270 will ban non-recyclable plastic bags beginning in 2015 for grocery store carryouts. Stores will instead be required to use recycled paper, reusable plastic, and compostable bags, which can be sold for up to 10 cents apiece, or consumers can bring their own bags for shopping. Bags must contain 20% recyclable content by 2016 and 40% by 2020. Large chains will also be required to take back used bags for recycling, and third-party certification will be required to assure compliance. The measure applies to grocery retailers over 10,000 square feet with at least $2 million in annual sales and an in-store pharmacy. It also applies to convenience food stores and food marts. There are some exemptions, such as for bags used to hold prescriptions or to separate items in order to prevent contamination. The bill had support of a broad coalition, including dozens of organizations, notably the California Retailers Association, Silicon Leadership Group, California Coastal Commission, Sierra Club California, and many cities and counties, including Los Angeles and San Francisco. It was opposed by a smaller group, including the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association and the American Forest and Paper Association. The city of Laguna Niguel also argued against the measure, stating this bill eliminates the ability of a local government to exercise its own discretion based on the unique needs and business climate of each city. Some opponents also objected to money for job retraining and to allow retailers to pass on costs of recycling to consumers by selling recyclable bags at a dime apiece. But for the majority in the legislature, this seemed a small price to pay for cleaning up our oceans, protecting marine wildlife, and our food supply.
I'm John Mattis, investigative guide, host of Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
John Mattis has won 7 Emmy Awards, a Golden Mike, and the Edward R. Murrow Award for exposing fraud and corruption. Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers is produced by the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena, guest hosting Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers on the East County Magazine radio show. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is warning customers about a wire fraud that has been targeting SDG&E residential and business customers. Reports indicate that individuals are misrepresenting themselves as utility employees by calling customers and threatening to turn off electric and gas service if an immediate payment is not made. Customers are instructed to purchase a prepaid credit or debit card and to call another phone number where information is then obtained from the card and the cash value is stolen. SDG&E wants to prevent customers from becoming victims of this scheme. SDG&E does not call to ask for credit card information on the phone. Never give your credit card information to any caller. Only provide credit information if you place the call and know who it is that you're calling. If you received a phone call that is suspicious, and if you do have an outstanding balance to resolve, hang up and then call SDG&E at 1-800-411-7343.
You are listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And as you can hear, we have a real treat for you today. My special guest today is a musician that I discovered while I was out visiting one of our local wineries in East County over the weekend, Patrick Hadley. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, you are with Array Instruments. You have a partner, Bill Wesley. And you have built this amazing instrument that we're hearing, which is called the Array Mbira, spelled M-B-I-R-A. So tell us a little bit about what inspired you guys to create this instrument.
Well, I have to speak for Bill, since he is the inventor. I met Bill about 20 years ago, and he had made about 10 of these. And they were very crude, but the idea was there. And I've been a woodworker and a musician a lot of my life, and immediately thought this instrument really deserves to be well made, and the world needs to know about these things. So, Bill came up with this idea based off of a small kalimba, probably a Hugh Tracy kalimba, which are very popular, can be bought in music stores.
Yeah, those are also known as thumb harps, thumb pianos, different names.
Exactly.
But the ones I've seen before are very small. Readers, if you could picture this thing, it's probably 2 feet wide by maybe foot and a half deep. It's large. And I understand that you designed this to have the full spectrum of a piano, not just one octave, but
yes,
the entire keyboard.
It's finely tuned to the Western 12-tone scale. All the notes of the piano are on here except for the very lowest and very highest notes. We make 3 different sizes ranging from 3 octaves to 5 octaves.
Now, I hear that some of the inspiration came from an old TV commercial. Tell us about that.
Well, originally, Bill saw a commercial that featured one of those small 15-note kalimbas, went out and bought one, loved it, but got very frustrated because it only played one scale. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to make one of these that can play in every scale and play all the notes on the piano. So he started experimenting, and it took him about 5 or 6 years to finally come up with this design that stacks the octave notes on top of each other and the columns of octaves in a series of fifths.
So how long did it take you to learn how to play this?
I'm still learning.
Well, it sounds pretty good. You guys, I understand, are really making a splash in the social media world. You've got some YouTube videos up, and last we checked, you had over 6 million views on one of those.
Yeah, it's really miraculous. I'm not sure how that happened, but I'm not complaining.
Very amazing. Can you give us a little sample of something?
Sure. I do a lot of improvising. I do play some cover songs, but today I'll just play a little improvisation in how about the key of F.
Well, we're delighted to have you perform this here for us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Isn't that something? It really has elements of, sounds like almost Asian influences, and also African, certainly, because the kalimba comes out of that part of the world.
True, indeed, both. Especially the Asian, because of the way the notes are arranged, the columns of octaves are in fifths, and a fifth. It's like, remember, a lot of us as kids played just the black notes on the piano, and we would laugh and say, we're playing Asian music. It's kind of similar to that. Can I just give you a little demo of,
sure,
of kind of how that sounds? You get these fifths working together, and you get this. And it also does calypso very well. I often describe the instrument as sounding like a cross between a harp. It has an angelic beauty of a harp, but it also has strong elements of the Caribbean steel drum. So
yes,
if you can imagine the two combined, you know, then you wind up with this sort of... Does happy really well.
Love it. Yeah, you can do reggae and everything on there. Amazing. Now, I understand that you have provided the imbira to some very famous celebrities. Can you tell us who some of those are?
Well, our most famous would be Sting. He's had one for a few years. Probably the first person of note that ever had one is Ry Cooder. a very well-known guitarist and film composer. Speaking of film composers, a lot of film composers actually all over the world are using our instruments. It showed up in one of the last episodes of Breaking Bad.
Wow.
It's also used by the guy who does True Blood on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
There's a film, 2011, it won the Academy Award for Best Foreign Film called In a Better World. A Danish composer used the instrument very, very heavily throughout the whole film. It's a beautiful film, and the music, I have to say, is quite excellent as well.
Amazing. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Now, do you play around town? We saw you at Milagro Winery, but where else might people find you performing?
I occasionally do a little busking down at Balboa Park. I've played a few weddings. I actually played a funeral one time. I don't really do regular gigs, but I play around a little bit. The Milagro Winery, I usually play on the weekends out there.
Very good. And they can also find you online. They can see the videos, or if they're interested in ordering one of these marvelous instruments and learning to play it, do you give lessons as well?
Oh, sure. If you're local, you can be involved as you like. We've considered actually doing workshops to allow people to be hands-on in building their own instrument.
Wow. How long does it take to build one of these?
As an average, I would say about 65 hours, sometimes a little less, sometimes considerably more, depending on the embellishments.
Mm-hmm.
We do some fancy inlay work occasionally, and also the size of the instrument.
Gorgeous. So if people want to get more information, what's your website?
The website is www.thearraymbira.com.
And that's The Array, A-R-R-A-Y, Imbira, M as in Mary, BIRA.com. And if you didn't catch that, listeners, you can go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org, and we're going to have a story up there in the arts and music section that you can find with all the links, and as well as some links to videos where you can watch some performances of the amazing Imbira with Patrick Adley. Well, Patrick, I want to thank you very much for joining us and providing such a treat to our listeners today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.